When I was in eighth grade, my group of girlfriends got into a bit of a tiff with another group of girls. They were the cool kids, and we were working at being deliberately uncool. Silly, loud, a bit over the top, literally. After gym class, we had taken to singing "Don't Fence Me In" at the top of our voices over the top of the lockers. Somehow, this bugged the cool girls. I can't imagine why. They took to singing back. "Dana Worsnop is a witch, doo-da, doo-da," or something very close to that. I took it as a high compliment to be singled out for such attention. Apparently, I had gotten under their skin. It was all fraught with the intrigue of middle school and adolescence, and it became a seminal moment in my young life. My friends and I were establishing our identity, claiming our personhood, rebelling against the dictates of coolness and conformity. I felt so free and alive singing with such abandon. "Don't Fence Me In" has been one of my favorite songs ever since. It's on the playlist I listen to when out walking in the hills with my beloved dog Scout. As I hike through the wide open spaces, country that I love, I imagine each ridge that I crest as the one where the West commences. We are a faith that loves the wide open spaces of reason, tolerance, and the spirit. We want to tear down walls of dogma, creed, hide-worn ideas. We infuse the spiritual life with a kind of freedom and openness that is refreshing and new. We yearn to break down barriers that divide us, welcoming all who seek to learn more, be more, to live in the freedom of mind and heart. Yet this freedom has a flip side that is not always so pretty. It can morph into the hyper-individualism that is at the root of much that is amiss in our culture. James Luther Adams was a 20th century Unitarian theologian who was profoundly affected by a firsthand experience of Nazi Germany in the early 1930s. He spoke eloquently of the necessity of a free faith that resists tyranny. He wrote, "I call that church free which brings individuals into caring, trusting fellowship, that protects and nourishes their integrity and spiritual freedom. It is open to insight and conscience from every source. It bursts through rigid tradition, giving rise to new and living language, to new and broader fellowship." Yet JLA, which we affectionately called him in seminary, also knew very well the dangers such freedom brought with it. He wrote, "To many people, the attraction of liberalism has been its openness, its tolerance, its freedom. But unchecked, precisely these qualities can produce the mind that is simply open at both ends. They can spell the loss of character and serve as an invitation to confusion. Sheer variety and vociferous freedom-diffused identity. A more adequate conception of breadth than mere open-mindedness is the breadth that relates the personal to the social, institutional dimensions of existence. Authentic liberalism protests equally against the mere privatization of religion and against its mere externalization and social action. What one lacks, the other demands. Yes, theologians do love big words. And yes, Fissiparous sent me to my trusty American Heritage Dictionary. It means tending to break up into parts or break away from a main body. Factious, prone to dissension and dispute. We Unitarian Universalists definitely have our vociferous moments. There is a reason that our third principle affirms not just a free search, but a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Ours cannot be a faith simply open at both ends. We cannot just believe anything we want. We must responsibly consider what we believe and do our best to live by it, all the while being open to new ideas with the humility of knowing that we could always be wrong. Which brings me to sing the praises of fences. The praises of good and healthy boundaries within our communities. We don't put up fences to trap us, yet we all do need good boundaries. Good boundaries, good fences allow us to play together both freely and responsibly. Imagine a great playground with a wide, expansive field and lots of different play equipment, yet with a clear fence around the very outside. A wide fence, to be sure, yet one that gives us a healthy limit, that corners the world enough for us to make sense of it, that creates the shadows that Da Vinci said provide needed perspective, the outlines and boundaries that help us understand and see more clearly. Good boundaries are part of what creates beloved community. Good boundaries are actually what a covenant of right relations is made up of. When we make promises of how we will be together, it is a matter of setting boundaries and limits. Good boundaries lie at the heart of the governance model your leadership is working toward. The ultimate goal of it is to empower the whole community to take up ministry and run with it and play with it, play in those fields. And the first boundaries that are set are very wide. Things like keeping people safe and being fiscally responsible. A clearly defined mission is also a kind of boundary. And so it becomes anything that is safe, fiscally sound, and furthers the mission of the church is fair game. What a playground that is. Sometimes communities also need to create tighter fences to meet circumstances that arise. Congregations can have significant trouble keeping bounds on difficult people. Many years ago, I know that Boof had a member who became so disruptive on Sunday mornings that you eventually had to exclude her. Though it was a difficult and painful decision, one that you worked on for a good long time, trying to find what is the right boundary, what is the right open and welcome. Yet it is true that sometimes the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one, as Spock said to Kirk, in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Painful as it was, you knew that your Sunday services, on Sunday mornings, this needed to be a safe place. Now, it is not lost on me that last week I spoke of radical hospitality. And today I am speaking about good fences. For ultimately, this is a balancing act, one that is impossible to get right all the time. Yet there is such great value simply in consciously seeking that balance, paying attention. When do I open my heart? When do I keep it? When do I protect it just a little bit more? Good boundaries ultimately ease our human relations. Another area for understanding good boundaries is in your relationship with your minister, which is unlike any relationship in all the world that is out there, either personal or professional. It really is in a class by itself. When I was in seminary, a predominant school of thought averred that the minister can never be friends with people in the congregation, which did actually seem just a little harsh to me. I have since come to understand that there are many kinds of friendship, and a minister's relationship to a congregation is one kind. It does have some real limitations, and yet the friendly feeling on both sides is not something we have to squelch or hold within tight fences. Still, when I speak of this, and I've been doing this deliberately here as your interim minister, it surprises people and sometimes even annoys them. And the whole conversation can get a little awkward. Yet I'm speaking of it directly today so that it's easier with your next minister, with your settled minister. When I am preaching and or often in conversation, I will tell you stories about my own challenges, my failings, my foibles, the neurotic twist I sometimes put on my life. And I do this deliberately as well. You need to know that your minister is fully human. I do know that that's pretty obvious most of the time. And yet, we ministers often come across as so confident and assured, just standing in the pulpit week after week, convinced that we have something worthwhile to say to you all, takes some real hubris. And yet, we are still very human. I do want you to know this, that for whenever I come across as confident and assured, that I have had significant struggles in my own life, and those struggles have given me true empathy for others' suffering. I want you to know that I have been to some pretty dark places myself and can journey with you through yours. It was with great relief that I came across the term normal neurotic in a pastoral care class. Turns out it's perfectly normal for each of us to be neurotic about something. There are times for me that the inside of my head is not a particularly pleasant place to be. And the reassurance that this is perfectly normal is freeing and affirming for me, and I hope it is for you as well. And yet, here's the thing. When I am feeling sad, miserable, neurotically insecure, and am convinced that I was a fool to think that I could ever be a decent minister, I turn to my friends and confidants outside the church. Our relationship does not involve you propping up your minister's self-esteem. My late night tearful calls go out to my own companions of the heart. The church is not the place for the minister to have ego needs met. You need to know that your minister is together enough to be there for you and human enough to understand another of those balancing acts. You want your minister to take her day off. Mine is Mondays, by the way. So you don't call on that day unless the matter really cannot wait. And we know we're here 24/7 on some levels, and when it can't wait, it can't wait. And you also want your minister to have a strong spiritual practice, healthy relationships with family, a network of friends beyond the church, hobbies and interests, and maybe even a great dog. So the minister and congregants share a friendship, yet the minister's most intimate relationships need indeed to come from outside the church. For you, after 25 years and the kind of familiarity and closeness that you had between you and your previous minister, some of these lines definitely become blurrier. And yet, with your new minister, you will be starting out fresh. He or she will have his and her own sense of what he or she needs. That was a lot of he's or she's in that sentence. Another thing to understand is that when your minister is with anyone in the church, he or she is working. Yes, even when you have him to dinner, and ministers love to be invited to dinner, they do invite your next minister over to meet you. And it's not that we don't enjoy your company and that we're not having sometimes even a rip-snorting good time. And yet, we are also always aware that at any moment, the conversation could become pastoral. It could shift into a more minister-congregant relationship more clearly. And it's our job to hold this awareness. The church that I served in Oregon had a women's group that met monthly on Mondays. I joined them pretty rarely, and some were disappointed. "It's just us girls," they'd say. "It's not work. You can just kick back." And they were a lovely, lovely group of women, and I enjoyed my time with them. And yet on my day off, I need to get away from church and church people. And honestly, you do want your minister to have such time. Though midnight calls are actually rare, they can come, and we know that we have to have the resources to be present when they do. The last time I joined the women's group, it was nearing on the hour of the evening that we were drifting toward our leave takings, when a woman in the church started telling me of a significant ethical dilemma she was facing in her work life. She was distressed, and I suddenly had to be very present to that distress. I was glad that I could be there for her. And yet, this is why ministers are working even at church potlucks. We know we may well hear about something you wouldn't have made an appointment to talk about, something we very much want to know. And even in the most convivial and fun times, someone might just choose to open up. It happens. And we need to be available in this way. And even when, as I said, we're having a great time, this awareness, we're carrying it with us. Our faith is a series of balancing acts. We are always dancing together at the midpoint of paradox. I always think of that balancing ball thing in the gym where there's a board with a half ball under it. I had a personal trainer once. One of my exercises was to balance on it. And then once I got the balance, I was supposed to start lifting weights. Never got to the weights part. Yet this balancing act is a fundamental fact of being human and being alive in these bodies. Being alive in bodies that can embrace joy and sorrow, trepidation and celebration. It is indeed quite a playground. We create indeed together quite a playground. And so I leave you with one of my favorite poems by the Sufi poet Hafez, "To Build a Swing." You carry all the ingredients to turn life into a nightmare. Don't mix them. You have all the genius to build a swing for in your backyard for God. That sounds like a hell of a lot more fun. Let's start gathering. Let's start laughing, drawing blueprints, gathering our talented friends. I will help you with my divine lyre and drum. Hafez will sing 1,000 words you can take into your hands like golden saws, silver hammers, polished teak wood, strong silk rope. You carry all the ingredients to turn your existence into joy. Mix them. Mix them. Amen, and blessed be.